This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to the Daily Digest. I'm Sharmila Ganesan, and together with me are Lim Soo Ann and Dashan Johan. So before the break, we were talking about World Suicide Prevention Day and taking a more collaborative effort towards preventing suicides. And now moving on to our second story.
We have a poll running on Twitter where we're asking you, do you think panels at conferences, webinars, talks and other similar events are improved by having both female and male speakers? So right now, 76% of you say yes. Panels are better, improved, but there's about 24% of you who said no. So you can keep taking that poll. You can also tweet us your thoughts at BFM Radio. If you have any experiences you'd like to share, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899.
Yeah, so we're asking you, we have that poll on Twitter, and we're asking you that because yesterday, senior legal advisor and human rights activist Michelle Yesudas posted a thread on Twitter with the title, "What do I do if I'm a man and part of a MANL?" So for the uninitiated, MANLs are panels that only consist of male panelists or experts. And since there are plenty of panels and webinars now, more than ever due to the movement control order, we thought it would be a good time to discuss this whole concept of MANLs and why it can be problematic and ways in which we can tackle this issue. So MANLs aren't exactly a new problem, but it's only in the past 5 years or so that people have really started to discuss and push back against it.
So according to the British Journal of Sports Medicine, in 2015, a Tumblr account, allmalepanels.tumblr.com, began documenting instances of all-male panels. So this, along with the Twitter hashtag MANL, has helped create awareness of the persistent gender bias in the composition of experts assembled to present at conferences, both online and off. So the British Journal admits that the issue is prevalent in sports and exercise medicine panels as well.
Mm. I was a big fan of all male panels at tumblr.com. It was the first time I started seeing it. And in 2019, Selena Rezvani wrote in Philly Mag, 91% of Americans believe gender equality is very important. Yet in reality, male speakers outnumber female speakers 2-to-1 at conferences, trade shows and marketing events. If conferences are meant to spread knowledge, empowerment and fresh narratives for the benefit of everyone, why are men the storytellers in chief? So she also went on to say that while there are certain industries that offer glimmers of hope, so for instance, the higher education industry in the US, where 44% of conference speakers are women, these are unfortunately, in the minority because there are more failures that can be highlighted. The IT world, for instance, may actually be the worst of the lot, as IT conferences in the US routinely showcase 2 women for every 8 male speakers.
And in 2018, a study titled "An End to MANLs: Closing the Gender Gap at Europe's Top Policy Events" found that international policymakers attending the yearly Munich Security Conference hear 3 female speakers for every 17 men, while the Davos World Economic Forum featured 1 woman for every 4 men. So the situation is pretty much the same if we look at the entertainment industry as well. So popular entertainment publication Variety landed in hot soup in 2018 when their event, A Night in the Writer's Room, featured 11 male panelists and only 1 female.
Yeah. Now, you might think that this could just be a problem in the United States or in the West in general. So, because, you know, there isn't any data available on what exactly is the situation like here in Malaysia, only anecdotal evidence. However, remember the study that Sharmila brought up earlier that said 91% of Americans reportedly care about gender equality? Well, that same study found that only 42% of Malaysians care about gender equality. So, I wouldn't be surprised, especially given the anecdotal evidence, that if a similar trend of MANLs exists in this country as well.
So what can we do about MANLs? Well, Michelle Yesudas has a few suggestions for men who find themselves invited to be part of a MANL. So in her thread, which we briefly brought up earlier, she said, number one, to check if your panel only features all men. So, you know, she acknowledges that this happens, but do your due diligence, ask why are there only men on the panel or only people of one ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender gender identity or expression, you know, question what's the topic and if you are really that important.
Yes. And then Michelle goes on to say that if your panel is about a specific subject matter, you and the other men on your panel should join forces and locate the other women or other people from, you know, different ethnicities that can speak on this matter, new voices to break that echo chamber, and then give the organizers of that event this list and vouch for these people that you are suggesting.
Yeah, and Michelle also recommends that you speak to your organizers and tell them that you have a fantastic list of women, ethnic minority speakers, etc., that are experts, and you will be vacating the spot for them. So, you know, she says, don't worry, there will be other panels, not, you know, all is not lost. And if you really, really, really want to be on that panel, Michelle says, then, you know, then get the other guy to quit the panel.
Cage match.
Yeah, so we took off just a few sentences from her thread. So if you'd like to read her full thread, you can go on Twitter to her Twitter page at Michelle Yesudas. Mm.
So one of the things that we haven't talked about is what is the big deal with having a panel anyway? I mean, what can a diverse panel offer that a panel with only men can't? So to help unpack everything, we have on the line Michelle Yesudas herself, who is a senior legal advisor and human rights activist. Hi, Michelle. Welcome to the show. First things first, what inspired you to tweet out that thread? Is there a trend or a pattern that you noticed that inspired you to do this?
Okay, so for me, it's really COVID isolation and I'm getting webinar fatigue. So when you're in Myanmar, and I'm in a lot of conversations from civil society here, and we're doing a lot of workshops, and then of course Malaysia as well is having its own conversation. So I struck by how many webinars I get, and this is all men sometimes, which is, you know, and I just ask people, like, are you aware that this is a conversation about COVID-19, its impacts, digital realm, and it's all men? But I'm always taken aback by how many different views people have on panels being diverse, and how little people are willing to do to at least attempt to create an environment where it's a norm to expect a diverse panel without being branded as a troublemaker or batu api. Now, even the scientific community will say that all research benefits from diversity and a range of experience. And also, another thing that I think, especially, you know, when you get these webinar invites, we also have to be mindful that, you know, there's lots of research coming out in articles such as, in the Science News has published something where there's a steep decline in women academic authorship in the month of COVID. If you are somebody that's trying to create a progressive space for people during COVID, you should do the bare minimum to create more inclusive spaces for women.
So what can diverse panels offer that panels with only men can't?
So for me, I think people don't realize it's like a catch 22. Because let's just say you and I, we do a panel right now about, say, internet security, right? And then so you have your person, you know, you have your ideas about certain things, I have certain things. And unless we do our due diligence and do some real deep thinking, more often than not, it will become a representation of our perspective, which is not wrong. It's extremely human. But it is just, as we do more webinars and more panels, we should at least try to improve our capacity and then also improve, broaden our perspective. So for me, diverse panels tend to catch missing perspectives. So I'll give you an example. Setting the digital realm for women and queer people during COVID-19. COVID-19, when you use a gendered lens of its impact, is remarkably different from, say, a complete new experience. The UN published a policy brief in April on the impact of COVID-19 on women. And it does say that, yes, a huge amount of people who have actually been suffering from COVID are men. However, with other impacts of social distancing, lockdown, gender-based violence, for example, it has created this environment where it's been increasing exponentially, according to the brief. So many women are being forced in lockdown with their abusers, and not many support systems exist to disrupt or, you know, to make it accessible to women who are having this experience. So let's just say you have an all-male panel and you have COVID. Chances are people will not be talking about specific patriarchal systems and how women or, you know, queer people are made vulnerable because of COVID. So, you know, again, it's about finding the right person and trying to create a diverse experience for people who are listening to you.
Hmm. And one of the points you brought up in your thread is how men should vacate their spot on a panel so that it can be filled by a woman or an ethnic minority speaker. So now the question is, what if the man has only just broken into the industry? He isn't popular nor an influential figure. This panel could be a big break for him. So does these new people or does he have to vacate his spot as well?
I'm one of those people who I raise panels. I mean, like, and I do it very quietly. It's just like, hey, everyone, are you aware that the only man on this panel? And, you know, like, I just want people to take time to think, because I don't consider myself particularly militant advocate for ending manel. For me, it's just telling people it's a manel, and I think there are many ways that we can overcome this. And so if you see my threat and the approach, I would encourage everybody to take, it's actually collaboration and sharing our own networks. So I specifically would like to encourage the organizers to start communicating with the panelists. This is something that people severely underestimate, because a lot of the time, if you start speaking with the panelists and the organizers, because, well, I assume that, you know, the people that listen to BFM and the people that I'm thinking of, we are all part of a larger community that wants to create inclusive spaces, safer spaces, more progressive decision making. So when you're a panel full of men, ideally, first talking about an ideal world, organizers and panelists should attempt to have a discussion. And the outcome of this discussion is actually to ensure that you identify a list of incredible women speakers, queer speakers, people from ethnic, religious, minority backgrounds. If you can, indigenous speakers, especially if it's about something, you know, that about land grabbing, you know, it's incredible to have them there. So for me, it's to prioritize having an open conversation between the organizers and the panelists. And then when it comes to decision-making, all I can say is that I would encourage every single person on that panel to be generous. Like, it's always a question that I think people should start asking themselves if they haven't already, is that, am I the best person to speak on this? And, you know, should I really be benefiting from this platform constantly? Is there someone else that can benefit from this platform constantly? So if it is indeed a panel, which is, you know, several men on the panel, ideally the best person, who is somebody who's been benefiting from this platform for an inordinate amount of time, of course, be the volunteer to step down. And it will be, to me, a very powerful statement, especially when it's a powerful, well-known activist who says, you know what, I've benefited from this platform. There's a woman out there who almost rarely gets any recognition for her qualifications. Let's call her in. And she should be brought on as somebody who is a great addition to the panel, not just because she's a token woman. So for me, seasoned speakers step up. It really encourages other women to get on the panel, to feel comfortable getting on the panel, and it will also encourage other younger people to vacate and say, you know what, like, I'm starting to have this chance, but I'm also vacating it for women who are in a similar position with me, who they're young, but they've not gotten a big break.
So some might bring up the argument that there are fields that are simply dominated by men, so things like engineering and IT would come to mind. Is it acceptable for these industries to have panels?
You have areas that are male-dominated, and it's arguable STEM is male-dominated, IT is male-dominated, so is the legal profession. And so, I mean, as somebody who has been in the legal profession, and then now in Myanmar, I work with lawyers and lawyers' associations, there is always a counter-narrative to this.
Mm.
So, I mean, in many situations, like criminal law in Malaysia can be said to be male-dominated to a degree. And as people who are creating panels, webinars, and discussions, it is really, you have the responsibility to create the counter-narrative, to build counter-memory, and to build some sort of resistance where you have room for discussion for the inclusivity of women. Because everywhere there is a conversation about how IT, engineering, or science is male-dominated, there will be a discussion around it for a push for more women in STEM and the problem preventing women in STEM. And again, to me, a male panel will not be able to adequately flesh out all of these problems, because males do not have problems of accessing certain certain economic areas. So, like, if you had just men, you would actually lose the entire perspective of why there are more women in STEM. The same, maybe there's stereotypical problems where women are perceived as people who are not good enough to be in STEM. Women are struck down with primary caregiver work, so then they are unable to go out and produce academic reports, to do reviews, to do, you know, lab testing, and to do field work. So again, as I always say, that panels like most research can benefit from having a diverse panel. And between us, we really don't know what we're missing. So once when you go out to look for more people who can give you a variety of perspectives, it will strengthen your panel. So yes, for me, there's always a counter argument to make it more inclusive, even though an area is no dominant. It actually necessitates a more progressive and representative panel.
Okay, so just one last question. Is it then the responsibility of the panelists or organizers to ensure that panels are diverse?
I mean, that's a very interesting question, because also now I'm able to talk like this because I've been in human rights now for about 9 years already, you know, from the time I was in university. And I mean, I'm thinking back, I used to see myself as like the McDonald's Happy Meal at every panel. Like, I used to refer to myself as like, oh, all these senior people are here and I'm the McDonald's Happy Meal and I'm the woman, you know, sometimes. So like, but now I'm thinking I'm having this conversation with you, with somebody who is, I'm now 9 years. So it's also, I have to really reflect and think about saying no as well, not to walk the talk. And the fact that you feel that, yeah, sometimes it's people's work that's on the line. So that's all something you really do have to think about. Because also bear in mind that when I did the panel, it was actually just largely to have something concrete for friends who are talking to other friends. For me, it's the thread is to talk to people who are not specifically hostile about manner, about representation. It's just people who are on the fence, people who are still thinking like, what's wrong with manners? You know, like, I know manners are not good, but like, why? So I just made a thread, and it's more like, you know, a gentle push to improve our due diligence process. So for me, in terms of the panelist's job, organizer's job, it's I believe, right, and I'm also talking about our specific panels that you hear that happen, you know, amongst common friends, which are supposed to be progressive, pro-human rights. So for me, panels are part of a community's effort to increase reach, increase knowledge. So for me, it's always good to expand the process of due diligence and to be inclusive. So panelists, organizers, when you become more mindful of the circumstances you're in, it's good to actually collaborate. I mean, to me, that's the number one thing that I think would be really incredible if folks start talking to each other and then they start talking about what they really want, the audience that they really want, the message that they want to get across. And in that process, you can identify women together in your expanded network. And it will be a fulfilling process, I promise you. I mean, I don't know if people remember what it's like to collaborate anymore because COVID, right? But it is actually a really nice experience where you get together and you're actually trying to give someone else a big break and you're paying it forward. Like, I don't know. I mean, to me, it's a very underrated human part of your experience where you get to pay forward your amazing opportunities. And I really enjoy doing that. So, like, if you are doing a webinar on, say, as I mentioned, the digital realm, online harassment, we need to increase our margin to a higher level of due diligence when curating voices, especially during a pandemic. So, OHCHR has released a guide on impact to COVID-19 and LGBTI people in April. It actually highlighted a rise of hateful rhetoric among people blaming LGBT people for disasters. And so this is something that if we didn't have somebody who read about queer people, and especially if somebody that didn't experience being queer, these experiences are so key in demonstrating the very devastating impacts of COVID on people. And also sometimes a lot of people, if you get the same socioeconomic group, you know, you're just going to have one view, like the Bangsa bubble, for example. So I'd actually like to say my request are actually very small and the bar is very low. I'm really just asking organizers and panelists to take some sort of joint responsibility and to be more generous and to think of less of the, yes, I'm the best person. I just wanted to start to train myself and to get friends to stop getting out of that mindset, but rather to think about paying forward all of, you know, everything that we've got. We've benefited so much from civil society. So it's time to pay forward and time to grow it together. For me, currently in a civil society, the bar is so low. The fact that when I actually just asked for a non-manual, it is already still perceived as controversial in the 21st century, and that is telling.
Thank you, Michelle. That was Michelle Yesudas, senior legal advisor and human rights activist. So we have actually been asking you your thoughts on the idea of panels on Twitter.
So our question is, do you think panels at events like conferences, webinars, talks and so on are improved by having both female and male speakers? So right now, 79% of you say yes, but 21% of you say no. And we've got a couple of a few comments on this. We have Ape in HD says that gender does not matter. Muhammad also says it's not about gender, it's about the correct and deserving people on the panel. It's fine for it to be all female or all male, but having both just for the sake of it doesn't improve panels. But we also have Azman Rahman, who says that on such panels, diversity, not just across gender, but also race, beliefs, and etc., is key to ensuring all views and opinions are heard, challenged, and debated.
I think that's the point, isn't it? That at the end of the day, what is the purpose of me attending a talk if every or a panel where everyone on that panel is speaking about issues either without a perspective on what my life or my experiences might be like, or attempting to speak on behalf of people whose experiences they don't have. So that's why it's necessary to, as far as possible, if you're discussing an issue that is wide-ranging and refers and you hope to give the most amount of benefit to the people listening, it should reflect as many viewpoints as you can.
Yeah.
You can't ever have everyone, but you can at least make an attempt to reflect as many as you can.
Yeah, I think that's something that people don't really think about, right? Because it's always that simple answer of, oh, it doesn't matter, the genders don't matter, as long as it's good. Yes, of course, you want the thing to have quality. But it's the same thing with movies, right? People always say, I don't care if the director is male or female, as long as it's good. But people, I think, they don't think about the viewpoint or the perspectives of, like, different perspectives that will be brought to the table if different genders, you have different gender representations.
And I think in today's world, it's a flimsy excuse to say, oh, I didn't know there was such a person. Because you can easily do research on who might be available and interested to talk about the issue that you want to share. You know, it's not as difficult as it used to be to look up people who might have experiences in this particular field or that field and to just reach out to them to, like you said, Chamalaja, at least just try.
Yeah, and I also think that it's not about having someone on a panel tokenistically just to tick your gender box or your race box, right? The truth is there are people of these, there are diverse people of different genders, of different orientations, of different backgrounds, whom you could tap into. The thing is that up till now, by and large, people have not thought of doing it.
Yeah, they never put in the effort. They never go the extra mile to look for these people. Yeah. They always just, oh, you know, these are also good. What? All these guys are good. So why are you complaining?
Yeah. And certainly I know that even here on The Bigger Picture, if those of you have been listening to us consistently, Dash joined us only earlier this year. And before this, for quite a while, we were a team of just women. And while that has been great, I love working with my fellow women. Having a man on the discussions has actually added a great amount of diversity. So it's not just about diversity in terms of, oh, we're not saying women need to be on every panel. What we're saying is diverse voices need to be in on conversations.
And on that note, I'd like to ask you, Dash, what would you do if you're invited to a panel?
You know, I've been it's a bit tricky, right? Because of course I would like to sit here and, you know, follow the advice, the great advice that Michelle gave earlier, which is, you know, I should, if it's, let's say I'm invited to a panel of five guys, I should step out and all that. But that's why I asked the question. But, you know, what if the person isn't influential? What if the person, so for example, like myself, I don't see myself, you know, anywhere near the top of the food chain, you know, in terms of the media landscape or in terms of journalism and all that. So, you know, these panels that I get invited to might also be a platform for me to you know, let my voice be heard. So there is a tricky situation. So I am still struggling with that. But I think that Number one, the organizers have to make it clear. Like, I mean, if you already have four guys, why are you asking me to come along as well? And also, I think if you come from a place of influence, if you're already getting invited to panels every single week, missing out on a few isn't going to hurt you in any way, right? So I think these are the things that needs to be taken into account.
I really like Michelle's approach on making the whole thing a collaborative and a caring process. And I think that's something that we don't think about very much when we have events or when we have talks. At the end of the day, we get so caught up in, you know, the event, the success, how many people attend, we lose sight of why we're having it in the first place. If you're having a discussion and you hope to give value, especially in civil society issues, especially when it comes to education, if you hope to give value, it should really be about the message. It should really be about the audience. And maybe when you reposition it that way, you can automatically see why this is naturally the best choice to make. We are running out of time, and this is a great conversation, though. So if you have thoughts that you'd like to share with us, if you'd like to tell us what you think about Manals, you can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or drop us a message on Facebook. We are BFM, The Bigger Picture. And if you've missed any part of today's show, the podcasts are available at bfm.my/dailydigest, on the BFM app or on Spotify. Coming up at 3 p.m. on By the Book, we'll be speaking to Hannah Alkaf, a Malaysian author, about her latest middle grade fantasy book called The Girl and the Ghost. So that's it from us on The Daily Digest. Keep it here on BFM. The 3 o'clock news coming up soon. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.